Let me in. I want to be closer to you. Open up your soul. Let me find that part of you, the part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your
touch your mind. Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. Y'all know I'm a fan of Rosin Coven, and I'm a fan of the Edwardian Ball, and they're like a Reese's Peanut Butter Cup of fandom for me, because here to talk about the Edwardian Ball and Rosin Coven, the founder, Justin Katz. Welcome.
Hey, thank you. So nice to be back.
I'm glad to have you back. Before we get into any of it, let's talk about how did the Rosin Coven come to be and why is it called Rosin Coven?
So the origin story would go back to the days when people would put classified ads in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
The founding member of Midnight Rose placed an ad asking for people to join a strange but beautiful ensemble. And the first couple people she collected was myself, the bass player, and Gingerbread Candy, the cellist.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to come with a drummer, and soon after the vibraphonist, all of us being longtime collaborators, and we put together this ensemble that became Rosin Coven. And the name coming from rosin, that which you put on the bows, so the bass, the cello, and the violin, it's like the pine sap, basically, that string players use to make their bows work. And a coven is, some would say, a group of witches. Some would say a collection of characters that are bonded through practice and through shared experience, sometimes closer than family.
Okay. Before you got together with Rosin and formed Rosin Coven, what were you doing? Were you an independent musician? Had you just started? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's... my playing goes back to sort of late high school days, so I was already an aspiring musician for, you know, maybe the better part of a decade. And I was in a touring and recording band that was called You, Y-O-U, along with the drummer. And... you know, we at the time were part of the San Francisco Bay Area underground musical and creative landscape. We had a warehouse in East Oakland called the Jingletown Gallery. And it was a live music venue, recording studio, art gallery, living space, and place of refuge for wayfaring creatives. Might have thrown a couple of raves. And it was really a great springboard for us to bring people together around the participatory projects like You and like Rosin Coven.
So what kind of, or how would you characterize You?
That's, you know, I tend to always end up in these projects that have first of their kind names, you know, like Rosin Coven being the world's premier pagan lounge ensemble.
Nice.
Dr. Abacus is cartoon jazz. The U Band was, I think, a mixture of excited, creative young guys with a big bag of costumes, Mylar space blankets, and a musical collection inspired by bands like Gong and legends like Sun Ra.
Ah. Okay. So when you were in high school, did you gravitate toward the alternative even then?
Yeah, I think I did. I mean, I thought it was obvious that I was being Robert Smith from The Cure for Halloween, but my classmates didn't quite understand what I was going for.
So what did they think you were?
Like the weird art guy? I'm not sure, you know.
I love it.
I've become long comfortable with just sort of leaning into what feels right, the experience I want to create and share, and then holding tight the people that want to contribute to or go along for that ride.
Okay. So now we fast forward. We are in Rosin Coven. And how do you come up with the sound that you guys do? Is it more of a collaboration, or did the person who put the ad in the paper have a vision?
I think it's always been very collaborative. You have people from very diverse backgrounds. Some are classical symphony players. Our violinist is from a Balkan music background. Myself being, and our rhythm section, kind of rock, funk, punk, but always gravitating towards this larger ensemble sound. I think, you know, one of Carrie, Midnight Rose's biggest influences was also very theatrical. She grew up with a Broadway show tunes, classics, cabaret, Weimar. So you have this like big kind of show presence side of storytelling that sometimes, you know how it is with a classic like cabaret, where the show and the music actually belies something that is more complex, and something that is really reflecting deeper layers of human experience. So I think Rosin Coven found different musical ways, whether it was through big band swing or through tango or through trip hop or whatever we were doing at the time, to tell the story of something that was deeper and hopefully more relatable about the human experience.
Very cool. So how many different vocalists have you had throughout the years?
It's always been a group where everyone sang their part. I'd say, you know, always Midnight Rose as the lead. We had another woman that was with us for our first three albums, Carrie Abrams, also known as Elia Zeker, and she was the second lead vocal until she left the band in the mid-2000s. And then Lila, a.k.a. Jasmine Garden, on violin, filled in as our second lead. Rosin Coven's always had two interplaying lead vocals, and then the support ensemble singing of the other five, six, or seven of us, depending on who was in the room.
Okay. So what were your first three albums? Because I have Sing Me Malaise and Menagerie. And where are they in the lineup?
The first album was called Penumbra.
Okay.
And that was followed up by a rather noisy but exuberant collection called Live in the Pagan Lounge. And then Menagerie. Then Sing Me Malaise.
Okay.
And then just about 1 year after the project retired from live performance, we recorded our final album, All Things Are Temporary and Eternal.
Okay. So, and you, I have a couple of cuts that I will be playing a little bit later for our listening audience. I always gravitate toward any title that has animals in it, so it's no surprise which ones I chose. Now I want to talk about the Edwardian Ball and whose brainchild was it? Because, as you know, I'm a big Edward Gorey fan, and it's always a thrill when there are other people who are Edward Gorey fans. But talk about how you guys came up with the Edwardian Ball.
Right. I mean, the punchline you've already said is like, who knew how many Edward Gorey fans there were out there? But working our way back in the early, well, I guess this was the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Rosin Coven had a martini bar out in the middle of the Nevada desert. Some people might know as Black Rock City.
Okay.
And one night after we played a show, we were carousing around our bar and saw that somebody had left an Edward Gorey book there next to the martini glasses.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all began to gather around and read it, that book being the Gashly Crumb Tinies. And
the gateway
we were having
drug.
So much fun taking turns reading these gory mm-hmm. vignettes, mm-hmm. you know, the mm-hmm. letters. This particular book, for those that aren't familiar with it, details the demise of children, letters A through Z, in what has been referred to lately by Carla Kilstadt, if you're familiar with her, is 26 little deaths or 26 tiny deaths.
Uh-huh.
So it's, you know, a little dark for some, but it's pretty hilarious and very clever.
Yeah.
And we decided at the end, why don't we have a party back in San Francisco and perform this book? And our friend at the bar said, hey, I have a club, which turned out to be the Cat Club in San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
Still going strong.
Yeah.
And we said, well, we've got the band. And we said, let's pick a date. And that very December, we did the first Edwardian Ball featuring the Gashly Crumb Tinies. And that consisted at the time of only the finest technology, which was us reading the book, playing music, and using a slide projector to project the images onto the wall.
Okay.
And people showed up even for year one in amazing costumes, dressed like Gorey characters, dressed like Edwardian era, dressed like whatever they wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it might have only been a couple of hundred, maybe 300 people, but right out of the gates, we realized that we had tapped into something that people really wanted to create with us.
Very cool. That was the Gashly Crumb Tinies was my very first poster that I bought when I went away to college. I saw it in a store and I thought, this is for me. So you can imagine how thrilled I was to find out that there is an entire event dedicated to it. So your first year, it's a smashing success. Do you realize, maybe we don't use, like, how long did it take for you guys to get away from the projector?
I think maybe by the second or I'm not sure we ever actually repeated the slides. I think what we realized when it would be more fun to start acting out the stories.
Mm-hmm.
Rosin Coven was always overly ambitious in the sense that we would write plays, operas, musicals, musical dramas, where we would be the band and the actors.
Okay.
And when you're holding an upright bass, it's like in my case, it's really hard to act a scene.
Yes.
So we played around with that for the second and the third and the fourth year, arranging the music so that we could also have parts, dramatic parts, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And I think by year five, 2005, is when we thought, this might work a little better if we invite some other people to help act out these stories while we're reading and performing the music. And that led to us inviting Vaudeville Society, who were also fairly new in the Bay Area at that time. All of us were, you know, just babies, really. And we invited them to come and help perform The Evil Garden, which is one of also one of my favorite stories. And then I would say the level of chaos exponentially grew. You know, my co-producer, Mike Gaines of Vaudeville, and I were just reminiscing the other day about that year in the Cat Club, which turned out to be the final year in the Cat Club, when we were having performers on zip lines with fire fingers moving through a room that had 10-foot ceilings.
Yep, that's the kind of thing you do when you're young. Nothing will happen. What could go wrong?
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't even get that far.
So you're talking about, if you exclude the two that we've just talked about, The Evil Garden and Ghastly Crumb Tinies, what's been your most favorite to perform? And then what's been your most favorite just to read for you?
Now, this is testing. I wish I had gone back and said, what stories do we do? Because, you know, 23 of these. You know, I would say we've done such different takes on stories for a number of years. We had a really amazing director that came up from Los Angeles and helped us conceptualize the stories in really different ways. And one year, I think one that stands out the most is a year that we turned the entire book, Imbroglio, I think it was called. And it was a game show. And we did it as like a 70s game show.
Oh.
And I wish I had better details about it, but do remember is that all of the conventions we'd had around the story were gone, and it was a night of incredibly tacky 70s costumes, confetti cannons, lasers, MCs that sounded like used car salesmen. And, you know, by the end, it's like, what have we done with this? Where's Gory? But he's really in there. You know, the spirit of these stories is just with us all along. So that was pretty great. I'd say there's some other stands out, like The Epiplectic Bicycle, The Curious Sofa. There have been some really great works, and each one has had its own cast and its own style, and always, always Gory.
Yeah, yeah. My favorite, just to read outside of Ghastly Crumb Tinies, is The Insect God. I love the illustrations for it. When he finds her at the end, he didn't recognize her.
Yes.
I love that one.
Yes.
All right.
I do love that. It's a great one.
So you've had different themes every year. So talk about why you guys have stepped away from producing or stepped away from the Edwardian Ball. Like what is your role now vis-a-vis the Edwardian Ball?
Oh, specifically the band?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so, you know, I really took on a dual role as things were growing and evolving over the years, and have been a lead producer, co-producer, throughout. So when the band decided to retire from live performance, it really just changed my ability to participate in the event design and production in different ways. It kind of opened things up for me.
Okay.
And I remain the producer with Vaudeville, co-producing with them. So really, in that sense, not much has changed in terms of how we approach the event, but now I have been able to co-design art installations. I've been able to narrate the Gory story. I can really have creative freedom as an artist in a way that is different because I'm not on stage right holding my upright bass. And so sometimes I miss that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, all things are temporary and eternal, right? So
sure.
Change moves on, and I'm still really happy to be producing this event.
So is this your first year of being not on stage, or did you start earlier?
This will be my third year of not being in the band, but I've somehow still found myself on stage reading the book.
Okay.
Introducing or having the ability to be a bit of a host. So every year is now just new opportunity.
Okay. So you have a different story that you focus on each year. What's the story this year?
This year, being our 25th anniversary, which feels like a big milestone, we're calling it a quarter century of Gory.
Uh-huh.
We decided for the first time since 1999 to revisit the Gashly Comb Tiny.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm so happy right now.
So we'll see you there?
pretty much, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, perfect.
Okay.
Looking forward to that. Yeah, so we're restaging it. I mean, it's pretty wide open. I doubt there's going to be a slide projector involved unless we're, meta-referencing something.
Okay. So you're redoing the Gashly Crumb. I'll bring my Gashly Crumb Tiny's lunchbox with me.
Perfect.
So when...
Me too.
What's the difference for a person who's thinking about going? What's the difference between the Friday night event and the Saturday night event?
There have been years where we have made them more distinct in terms of calling it this night or that, the Edwardian mm-hmm. Eve, the ball, the World's Fair. But what we've found is that people really want the full experience of the ball throughout the weekend. So the way we differentiate the nights is by programming.
Mm-hmm.
So we have different performances each night.
Okay.
And also, we focus Friday more on being family friendly. We have what we call a young Edwardian ticket for a far lower cost, mm-hmm. so people can bring their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really wonderful. Like, we have families now that tell us how they've grown up together going to the ball year after year. We had a family reach out and sent a video of their son dancing and said he loves the ball every year. This kid can't be, I mean, he's definitely under 10 years old.
Uh-huh.
Had sweet dance moves.
Aww.
And asked if he could be an ambient performer and dance throughout the event in exchange for a kid's ticket on our Friday night.
And
for us, that was just really, like, so heartwarming. I just was like, of course you can.
This
is what it's all about.
I love that. Now,
Friday has a little bit more of that. Saturday, you know, gets a little saucier. It's like a little bit more of the late night revelry. And some people like a much more kind of full event, and some people enjoy having a little bit more room to dance.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that depends on whether you come early, whether you come late, whether you bring a group, your family. We make room for everyone.
Okay. And in the past, when I've gone, I've seen, like, you have, like, people printing out coasters, and you had, like, I think there was, like, a midway with a flying contraption. There was all manner of things going on. Is that still part of it?
Yeah, absolutely. One of our longtime collaborating groups are called Kinetic Steamworks, KSW,
mm-hmm.
and they very early on drew the distinction by saying, we're not steampunk, we're steam dorks. And they build steam engines and, you know, we'll actually bring a trailer with a vintage steam engine and pipe the steam into the ballroom and power all kinds of contraptions like you're talking about.
Wow.
They'll printing presses. And my favorite was a massive array of gears that might have spanned 20 to 30 feet that culminated in a pencil sharpener where we gave people Edwardian ball pencils.
So, see, I love stuff like that. just like a ridiculously over, like sort of a Rube Goldberg-esque steampunk combo.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we have to get a permit to close the street for an engine that powers a wall of gears that sharpens a tiny pencil.
I just love that. I love that. So it's the Edwardian Ball, and who's going to be performing this year?
Well, we did actually just release our lineup. So, it's a big mix of performances. And if people are interested, they can go to our website, which is edwardianball.com.
Mm-hmm.
And we have our lineup listed. And, some of the highlights, of course, include our co-hosts of the event, Vaudeville Society.
Mm-hmm.
We have Dark Garden, the Corset Queens of San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
We have a group called the Grand Artique, which are a fantastic immersive installation group that travel the country. You see them at places like Electric Forest or LIB, and we're really fortunate that they will come and design some experiences for the ball. Zoe Jakes, probably the most incredible choreographer, belly dance performer that I've ever had the chance to work with. Also part of the band Beats Antique.
Mm-hmm.
She'll be with us. Actually, my other band, Dr. Abacus, the cartoon jazz band, is playing on Friday night. And that is all the guys from Rosin Coven plus another horn player.
Okay.
So that's pretty exciting to actually get back on stage.
So you can't actually, so you don't actually, the name Rosin Coven, the band named Rosin Coven isn't performing, but the members of Rosin Coven are in a new band.
We're in a band that's been around for quite a long time and are really excited to be there. And when we get to it, there's also a very exciting offering from Rosin Coven that we'll have at the ball.
Okay.
So, we have some of our closest friends emceeing the stages, Kingfish, Miss Emma, Dorian Dietrich. We have Ms. Margot. We have Le Cancan Bijou. And Bella Ruino is actually the new band from Rosin Coven's violinist, Lila Sklar. So, yeah, we're still there on every day and on all the stages.
Very cool. So, for our listening audience, when and where is the Edwardian Ball?
So the Edwardian Ball 25th anniversary will be January 30th and 31st. That's mm-hmm. the last Friday and Saturday of January.
Mm-hmm.
At the Regency Ballroom in San Francisco.
And then after that, like you mentioned the Vaudeville Society and all these other bands, where can we see all of these intriguing bands that you've been talking about? Because I know our audience is interested.
Where can you see them?
Like, what do you have anything on the, like, if people wanted to see the cartoon jazz band or if people wanted to see Vaudeville, is there anything mm-hmm. already planned for next year or this year even?
Yes. Well, you can see Vaudeville also creates the New Bohemia New Year's Eve in mm-hmm. San Francisco.
Okay.
And that is very much in the culture of what we create, which is an immersive participant-filled party to bring in the new year. So a lot of people really love that event, and I would suggest anyone looking for something wild and creative and fun to do on New Year's Eve, New Bohemia is the place to go see it.
And where's New Bohemia?
That's at the Mint.
Oh, okay.
San Francisco.
Okay, okay. Yep. And and then is your cartoon jazz band going to be playing anywhere?
We've got a couple of shows. We're going to be the first week of January, January 8th, we're going to be at Spats in Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be a few more. What we're going to do is anyone who signs up for the Edwardian Ball mailing list mm-hmm. or on our social channels, which is, you know, where, right where you'd expect to see it, at Edwardian Ball
mm-hmm.
or the Edwardian Ball, are going to see all of our upcoming collaborator and community friends and performances.
Okay. All right. Well, then, once more for our listening audience, when and where for Edwardian Ball, and where can they get tickets?
The Edwardian Ball 25th anniversary featuring the Gashly Crumb Tinies will be January 30th and 31st, 2026, at the Regency Ballroom in San Francisco. And all of our information, our lineup, and tickets are at edwardianball.com.
All right. Well, Justin Katz, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and you've warmed my heart by returning to the Gashly Crumb Tinies. I'm just so excited about that. So I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much. And, you know, I think we're going to have time to hear some music, and I do want to share that I was just in Los Angeles with Rosin Coven's producer,
mm-hmm.
our friend Buck Down, and got to witness the cutting of the lacquer of Rosin Coven's limited edition final album,
ooh.
Which is going to be for sale, debuting at the Edwardian Ball. So there will be a beautiful gold foil pressed, signed and numbered Rosin Coven record for those who would like a little piece of this Edwardian history.
Nice. Excellent. And as I mentioned earlier, I always gravitate towards the songs that have animals in them. So I am going to play two of the tracks from this upcoming Rosin Coven CD/LP/, what other formats are there? VHS? No. Cassette.
All the places you get your music online.
Exactly. Once again, thank you so much for being on the show. And people of Earth, let's give a listen to the Rosin Coven. This, my friends, is Skunks and Doves.
Wake the gods. Warn them. Shake the sleeping door. And chiming the broken, sound the bells, toll them. As they bring a tale to whisper in your ear of the motley crew assembled here. It's the story of tainted love. The skunks are mingling with the dove. Look out, they'll find you here, quietly feeding on your fear. Waiting in the wings, the song you A stolen bite.
Right! Look out, the stones are mingling with the dawn.
Hanging on by a thin string of floss of gossamer and a wedding ring. The light is changing in the sky, a constellation of the days gone by. You have been on my mind so close, yet I find we are drifting out at sea. It's a strange and absurd melody I have heard. Revisitation of the birds. Tell me, how do we learn? Is it a slow, dry burn? Or do we flash untamed with our hearts all aflame? We could sit and complain till the day we die. Caught up in our anger, and that could be why I have lost my wind. The brambles and the vines in this thicket of thorns, where the wild weeds are born. Let them cover me, oh, they comfort me. I knew a bunny girl, she left me long ago. A silhouette and thread she left behind. Stitch me up and lay me down in honeysuckle robes. Haven't I changed? Haven't we changed? A giggle of geese, a gaggle of girls, a boister of boys, a litter of pearls, spice and sugared blood upon the snow. Poppy tails and withered snails, the fairy tale ends with a bang. A crash to the gut, I'm thrown. Thank you.
listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. You've been thrilling to the dulcet tones of Rosin Coven. We just got through hearing Ladybug's Pas de Deux. We heard from their new LP, Revisitation of the Birds and Skunks and Doves. It is now 12:40, and I've got yet another San Francisco delight that will make you so happy. As you know, the Kung Pao Kosher Comedy happens every year. Here to talk about it, I'd like to welcome the effervescent Lisa Godoldig. Hello.
Good afternoon. I was thinking I was going to be Rice-A-Roni the way you're doing that intro.
Well, you are a San Francisco treat. But
Thank you so much. You too.
So we're going to talk about, and I know I ask you this every year, but every year there are new people who haven't heard the story of how Kung Pao Kosher Comedy came about.
Okay. So Kung Pao Kosher Comedy is Jewish comedy on Christmas in a Chinese restaurant. Started in 1993. I thought it was going to be a one-time event. And here we are, the 33rd annual. And I went to perform in South Hadley, Massachusetts, just outside of Northampton in October of 1993. And I thought I was performing at a comedy club called Peking Garden Club. And I got there, and it was a Chinese restaurant. And being a Jewish comic, I was doing a lot of Jewish material in a Chinese restaurant and called a friend the next day in New York and said, I just had the most ironic experience. I was telling Jewish jokes in a Chinese restaurant, and out of that conversation came the joke of an idea to do a Jewish comedy night on Christmas in a Chinese restaurant, coming off of the tradition of Jews going to a Chinese restaurant and a movie for Christmas.
Now, when you did that first show that you were expecting to be a venue, were there a lot of people, were there a lot of Jews there to see you?
I have no recollection about that show in Northampton, but the first Kung Pao Kosher Comedy took place 2 months later in San Francisco's Chinatown, and I had never produced an event before, and I thought we had 400 people, but we just had having more people arrive, and I kept telling the banquet manager, just keep cooking, and he just looked at me like I was crazy.
Okay, but he fed everyone, yes?
Everyone got fed. Okay. And then we had to turn away 200 people.
Oh, no.
I didn't know how to produce an event at the time. Friends stood up and helped me and ushered people out the door. And then the next year I had two shows instead of one and just kept growing. So I learned a lot. I had no idea what I was doing. So I had to have learned a lot because I went from knowing nothing to knowing what I know now.
So I want to go back to that show that you didn't know how to produce. So what were some of the things that, in hindsight, you thought, oh, I should have thought of that, but didn't occur to you at all?
Oh, sound system, sound check, staff, volunteers, other people to help besides what was in my brain.
Okay.
So much.
So you're like, I'm just going to put on a show and show up and... How did it go?
It was great. Okay. And I had a full house plus, and then the friends who stood up to help did what volunteers now do of showing people to their seats. And there was a receiving line on the way out, and everyone just shook my hand and said, this was great. Aww. I hope you continue to do this. So something was born. You know, I also had made Critics' Choice in all the papers, so I knew that it was going to be popular, but I had no idea that it was going to be a 30-plus year event and have the likes of Henny Youngman and David Brenner and Shelley Berman and Elaine Boozler and all these household name comedians performing at the show.
That's fantastic. And what I like about that story is nobody ever knows when they're doing something that it's going to be epic or, you know, or even a flop or whatever. But that's just, you have to go into it just because you want to do it. And I think a lot of young people, it helps to hear that, oh, you know, you don't start out saying, oh, I'm going to do it for 30 years. You start out saying, let me do this event that I have no idea how to do.
Yeah, and you just put everything you've got into it. And luckily, I had hired someone to film the show, because the next year I was able to get a New York Times article, and I sent the video of the show, and David Margalek, who's a New York Times writer and Vanity Fair writer, and actually just came out with a book about Sid Caesar, the comedian, he loved the tape. And at the very end of the show, I just spontaneously decided to say, let's sing our national anthem, and we all sang Sunrise, Sunset. It was complete spontaneity. I mean, it's not the Jewish national anthem. It just came out of my mouth. And then he loved that. And, you know, the article that he wrote the next year was this three-quarter page article, and he would call me every night and re-interview me and wanted to get the phonetics of my mother calling my father for dinner, which went Irv, Irv, Irving. He wanted to know how many I's were in that.
So you talk about all of these hard-hitting comedians. I mean, like David Brenner, and you've got, I know you've got Elaine Boozler this year, but so how many comics have come through the show? Because that was the first year just you, or were there other people who were doing it?
No, there's always been like three other people.
Okay.
And then there have been some repeats.
Okay.
So maybe there's been 100. I should actually have that answer, because that's a good question. In the program, we put all of the names of everybody in each year, and then RIP next to the name of someone who has passed away. But I'd say 100 plus, since we've had repeats.
Mm-hmm. So when you were doing it, when you talk about all of these well-known comedians, were you traveling in the same circles, or were you starstruck when they came down from heaven to talk to you about being in the show?
I was starstruck. Definitely was not moving in the same circles as many young men.
Oh, okay.
But the way I got many young men is I remembered that he was listed in the Manhattan phone book, according to Terry Gross. She had said that when she had interviewed him on Fresh Air some years ago. So I called information in 1997. Like, information, please. Or city, please. Yes, Manhattan. Henny Youngman, hold for the listing. And then the others were, you know, friends of friends. And then people started to find out about the show. And I would just contact people's managers. And, you know, I never imagined having names that I had, or becoming friends with people, going to LA and having dinner at Shelley Berman's house with him and his wife. And she made a really nice comment on Facebook the other day on my photo of past headliners, including him, and said that, you know, they didn't know what to expect and they loved the show.
Aww.
I'm just paraphrasing, so I don't have it in front of me. Or Charo, who didn't perform at Kung Pao, but I've booked her and became friends with her. I mean, you know, just they're all people.
So
we've got them on pedestals because they're famous.
Right.
But a lot of the famous people, you just bring them down to your level or go up to theirs.
I love it. So this year you have, I saw that you have Elaine Boozler. Now tell me about that.
Elaine Boozler's fabulous. She's actually done the show twice before. 9 years ago was the second time.
Mm-hmm.
And certain people I just keep asking, and they say, no, or I'll come back eventually, or whatever. So I've been working on her for the last couple of years.
Okay.
She's a household name.
Yeah.
And I've known of her since I was 8 years old. She started performing in 1970-something. And, you know, if my mother knew about a comic, I knew that they were on everyone else's radar. And it's just such a treat to have somebody who has been in the comedy scene for 50 years.
So in this comedy scene, so what kinds of topics do you guys cover? Because you know, these are, as they say, interesting times. And do you address the elephant in the room, or do you try to keep politics out of it as a welcome relief?
I'm sorry, I can't hear the question. Just kidding.
Oh,
I'll probably address the elephant in the room. I think the person who will address the elephant in the room the most is Elaine Boozler on her social media. She's not holding back.
Okay. So, go ahead.
Oh, then we've got two other fabulous comedians. Orion Levine had actually performed 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He grew up in Brooklyn, he moved to L.A., and now he's in New York. And I just think he's a really smart comedy writer, brilliant, funny. Mm-hmm. He's about 30-ish, and he's been on James Corden and Just for Laughs Festival. And then sometimes some comedians come to me through friends or cousins. Amanda Marks mm-hmm. is from Atlanta, or she lives in Atlanta. She's actually fourth-generation Alabama Jew, however that happened. And she's friends with my cousin who lives in Atlanta. I have family in Atlanta, and this is the second comedian that my cousin Monique has presented to me to hire for Kung Pao. The first one was Rich Aronovich, who performed a couple of years ago, and Amanda Marks is just adorable and funny. And I can't wait to meet her. She's done my lockdown comedy show on Zoom, but I haven't met her in person.
So it sounds like your cousin has a good ear for comedy.
She does. She sent me two very funny comedians. One she went to summer camp with. See, those of us who are Jewish on the East Coast of a certain age and I guess parental income level grew up going to Jewish summer camp.
Mm-hmm.
I have friends who I've had since I was 14. And the friend who I refer to, who I talked to after the gig in Massachusetts, is a friend from my Jewish lefty summer camp. And these are people who are my inner circle of the last 50 years.
Very cool. Very cool. So how many performances of Kung Pao Kosher Comedy are there this year?
There are three.
Okay.
I'm sorry, there are six.
Ooh, okay.
There are 3 days.
Okay.
So December 24, 25, and 26, we have a 5 p.m. dinner and 8:30 cocktail show. The 5 p.m. dinner show has a six-course meal, and the 8:30 cocktail show has light fare of pot stickers and egg rolls and dim sum.
Okay.
Can I mention that some of the shows are sold out?
Sure. Why don't you tell us which shows aren't sold out for our listening audience?
There are still 7 tickets left for the December 26th dinner show.
Okay.
Otherwise, the 8:30 show each of the days, December 24, 25, and 26. And you can go to koshercomedy.com for info and cityboxoffice.com/kungpao for tickets. Can I mention also two other aspects, live stream and beneficiaries?
Please.
So during the pandemic, I started doing online shows. So Kung Pao was completely live streamed in 2020 and 2021. Mm-hmm. And we've kept the live stream element. So every single show is live streamed and people can watch it on YouTube live, either live or on replay after you've contacted the box office, of course. And since the first year, I've named 2 different organizations to receive partial proceeds. This year is the ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union,
mm-hmm.
and Jewish Family and Community Services, East Bay's Immigration Legal Services. So to raise awareness and funding as well as laughter.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Lisa Geduldig, I always want to say it Dutch, but I avoid it. I want to thank you.
You can say it correctly.
Geduldig. Geduldig. I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. And I know that the show is going to be wildly entertaining. So, you know, thank you for your efforts.
Thank you. And let me know if you'd like to come.
I always want to come. So. All right. We'll talk off air. All right, people of Earth, it's time for me
Goodbye, audience.
It's time for me to turn the mic over to Mr. Ford, who'll be pleasuring your ear hole, but I gotta leave you with my favorite band because they sing about rain and how they can't stand it. It is the Graham Central Station. It's Chocolate in the Lead, and I can't stand the rain. Until next week, my friends, ta-ta and toodly-doo.
Stand the rain, yes, my window. It's bringing back sweet memories. Hey, when it rains, do you remember?